chair of the school. The school was on a plot of ground which comprised one half of a city block. The street in front and on the east side were gravel. Victoria Street on the west was a dirt street. Miss Baldwin was my first teacher. The principal was Miss Rima Leflin. I attended this school through the third grade and then moved to Victoria High School in the fourth grade. The high school division moved to Patty Welder High School in about 1918, and the high school was then changed to Central and later to Mitchell, the name it has today. I attended Mitchell School through the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, and in the fall of 1920, went to Patty Welder High School, way out on North Street, where I stayed in the seventh grade the first year. I graduated from high school at Old Patty Welder in 1925. I attended classes in two high schools before I was ever out of grade school. The teachers of that time were about as good as they are today, but much stricter. We did not have all the aids that are used today. According to the experts running around loose today, all the teaching methods were wrong. But in my school days, I never knew anyone to get as far as the fifth grade and not be able to read. Victoria County was one of the first in Texas to have gravel all-weather roads. These were graveled and extended from the city limits to the county line in the direction of Port Lavaca, Edna, Quero, and past Bloomington. The road to Goliad and Refugio were not graveled all the way to the county line. There was no improved road to Hattiesville. Victoria's principal streets were graveled after 1900, and until 1917, there was no hardtop. The first asphalt streets were put in the business district beginning sometime in 1917. I have seen large loaded wagons bogged down on Main Street on the east side of DeLeon Plaza in the heart of town. My first travel was by buggy or wagon. Horseback was one of the most common modes of transportation. Oxen as draft animals were almost a thing of the past when I came along, but I can remember a few yoke of oxen pulling wagons into town. One in particular was hauling pecans to market. By about 1914, automobiles were coming into use, but there were more teams, buggies, wagons, and riding horses than automobiles. The first autos were too crude, and the roads too bad for cars to come into use too fast. During the long wet spells, a great majority of the rural roads and many of the town streets became mud holes without bottom and could not be traveled, some not even on horseback. In my boyhood, cotton was king. It was the money crop. Farmers raised great quantities of corn, cane, hay, and peanuts. But practically all of the feedstuff went to keep up the teams, poultry, hogs, and cattle. Most farmers raised and processed their own food. Hogs, chickens, sheep, turkeys, fruits, and vegetables were usually raised and canned or dried, and the meat put up and smoked. In the south part of this county, where there were large fields, most of the land was put in corn and cotton. In the western part and the area near Inez, there was less land suited to agriculture. Here the people practiced living at home, raised what they ate, and sold or traded produce for staple groceries. Farming was done entirely with teams and in most cases walking implements. Later came riding plows and cultivators, and finally tractors. There was, as a rule, a family on each 40 to 60 acres of land. With teams, it took a real farmer to farm and cultivate 40 acres with horses and mules. All of these families, either owner or sharecropper, had to eat and buy supplies. This made for a good rural economy. Cattle were moved overland to market. In the old days, cattle buyers went to the farms or to the ranches, went out in the pasture or went to the corrals, selected the animals they want, and in many cases paid for them on the spot. Later, cowhands came along and gathered these cattle as they went up and down the road and took them to the shipping pens where they were transported to market by rail. Later, trucks came into use, and the cattle buyer would go to the farm or the ranch, load up the cattle, and haul them to a central shipping point. Usually, in Victoria, it was out where Gross Worden is today. At first, the only method that was possible was to drive the cattle overland. There were no roads suitable for any kind of transportation, or no vehicles to carry them. Later, as better roads came in, trucks came into use. Probably the greatest impact in the change in the cattle industry was the Model T Ford. These Ford trucks were the first that I remember. They ran up and down the roads in the country areas, gathering the cattle. After good roads came in, large trucks were used to haul the animals to the market. The first trains that I remember were well-appointed passengers and good freights. And they were all, the engines were using oil instead of coal. There were a great number of fine luxury passenger trains operating throughout this part of Texas. They had good schedules and for that time were exceptionally fast. The only method of travel from town to town, especially in bad weather, was by train. People of the towns would give a bonus for railroading. Railroad would just build their tracks through their little towns. All sporting or entertaining events called for an excursion train. One of the favorite trips was to Port Lavaca, where there was a large pavilion built out over the water. Here, dances and fine meals could be found. Many of the first excursions started at Houston, came by the way of Rosenberg, Wharton, Edna, Victoria, and on to Port Lavaca. At each stop, passengers would board the train. People would come from Bay City and all other places on the rail system. At Victoria, trains from Quero, Beeville, and Bloomington would connect with the Houston train, and there have been as many as 400 people on one of these specials. Good highways, automobiles, radio, TV, motion pictures have killed the need of this kind of entertainment. The first telephones were the high wall battery crank type. In the beginning, the phone companies put in the system in the town, but rural people would organize and build their own line to connect with their community with the town system. These were crude, but cheap and served their purpose. The first real draft I remember was in 1917. The Guadalupe River almost ran dry. The first rice hay I ever saw used as cow feed was during this 1917 drought. Many, many of the larger ranchers shipped their cattle to various places, Kansas, Oklahoma, East Texas, or anywhere where there was grass. The 1900 storm was way before my time. 1919 and 1921 storms are still vivid in my mind. Like most Gulf storms, Victoria got a bit of wind and rain with these. Trees and roofs suffered until the practice of building tar and gravel roof or composition shingles. Most houses had good wood shingle roof. These do not blow away like the gravel and composition types do. I can't seem to remember many residents of Victoria leaving town ahead of the big blows years ago. I never saw anything happen like the great exodus of people during Carla and Beulah and some of the recent storms. I guess the old timers were the kind that didn't run, they stayed put. Since 1906, I have stayed through every storm or hurricane that has hit Victoria except one in 1945, at which time I was in the Pacific War area. I still have my first time to run. Law enforcement officers have been about the same over the years, some good, some bad, like teachers, bankers, mechanics, doctors, and preachers. I come from a long line of law enforcement officers. One of my great uncles was sheriff here way before the turn of the century. My father started as deputy sheriff in 1896 and was elected sheriff in 1906. Over a period of later years, he served some 25 years as sheriff of this county. My first recollection of peace officers were men on horseback. They did not use automobiles. It had no roads to travel on. It was during the early life and an elected peace officer was expected to go get the criminal himself, especially if the man was considered bad. It was not the idea of the voter to have a head lawman just sitting up the office sending out his deputies. These old-time peace officers had no help like they have today, no FBI, State Highway Patrol, radio, radar, fingerprints, although all of those things. But surprisingly enough, the capture average of these old-timers was about par with the officer of today. There is not too much difference in the criminal of today and the one of other years. Maybe today they are a little younger. There were just as many sorry, no good pumps for each 100 people as there are today. There are just more people in the world today. Politics and politicians are still politicians, and they are in politics. They still try to impress people that their only motive in running is the welfare of the voter. A different system is used to hunt voters today. In the old days, politicians went to political rallies at the schools, churches, and barbecues. And by great oratory, they tried to sway the crowd. Today, it is television, but the same old bunch of stuff is dished out. The less said about smuggling and prohibition, the better. Most anyone who had grandpas in the U.S. during prohibition can learn all about it by simply asking them, their kinfolks, a bunch of questions. As for murders and hangings, everyone that ever killed anybody or got killed had many kinfolks, and the killings were no fault of these people. In regard to murders and hangings, perhaps it is best that I just forget what I know about these. However, there have been three legal hangings in Victoria, one in 1838, one in 1907, and one in 1913. There have not been any since 1913. All death sentences were carried out in the electric chair in Huntsville in later years. The earliest doctors I remember were buggy doctors. A short time later, they began to use cars. Most all doctors made house calls, even at night. They carried their own instruments and simple medicine with them. They were wonderful psychologists and had good bedside manners. Some old doctor said medicine worked best if they had a sweet or bitter taste and a bright color or a bad smell. They claimed that color, odor, and taste had a whole lot to do with how the mind worked. Doctors carried little iodoform pads in their pockets that gave them that doctor smell. Dentists could use oil of cloves to put the odor of a dentist office about them. Doctors could and would operate in the home on a kitchen table or anything handy, using any kind of knife, their own special equipment, or even a pocket knife. When way out in the country, with ruddy, muddy roads and freezing weather, there was no way to move a patient. Something had to be done, and done quickly, and these old men arose to the challenge. If doctors today did not have all the highly trained, efficient technicians to test and tell them what the troubles are, I expect the old-time doctor was about as good as a modern one would be if it was up to him to decide what ailments a patient suffered from. Among the older people, many home remedies were used. The Negro and Mexicans were extremely good with herbs and home cures. Surprisingly enough, much of the medicine used today comes from the same plants the old folks or home remedy doctor used. One thing the old doctor knew was it was best to isolate patients with contagious diseases. The city or county health officer would ban all public gatherings, such as shows, games, churches, and all other groups during any form of epidemic. Among the festivals, some of the German celebrations stand out. There was always an abundance of food. There was dancing and singing and good music. The old-time German bands were a special feature. As these people were lovers of music and fun, they loved their beer. Farmer's Day in Victoria was the tops. This was one day each year set aside to honor the volunteer fire department. It was their day. Visiting firemen came from all surrounding towns. Special trains and excursions ran into Victoria from all directions, bringing hundreds of people to the big celebration. The different fire departments from other towns competed in all types of races, hose coupling, nozzle connections, parish rule races, and many other types of competition. The big parade was the highlight of the celebration. Floats, carriages, people just as you see today. The big barbecue was free. Half of the park, now called Ilion Plaza, was fenced off and set up with big tables. The quarter of a block in the rear of the old courthouse building was in those days vacant of any kind of structure. Here the big fire pits were dug. The entire quarter of a block would be taken up with pits. Cowboy stew was cooked in big cast iron pots. Anyone could help themselves. The meat and most of the other supplies were donated. Barbecuing cooking meat usually started about 10 o'clock at night and went on through the night up until noon the next day. The meat was not cut up in small pieces and put on the pit as it is today. It was usually put in 20 to 30 to 40 pound chunks. Part of firemen's celebration that attracted large crowds was the tournaments. These were run by men on horses, attempting to spear rings hanging from some form of a standard. The course usually was laid out on the south side of Ilion Plaza between Main and Bridge, and then on down from Bridge by the side of the old courthouse on Constitution. Several dances were usually held in halls around town the night of the celebration. These drew large crowds. Fiestas were somewhat different. Mexican food, gambling, horse racing, cockfights, and a lot of fighting among the people. As a rule, a dance would be given at night in an open-air platform. Old-time fiesta grounds resembled a camp more than anything else. Small food booths were put up usually under brush covering. Here, all types of Mexican food were sold. Chili, enchiladas, all forms of goat meat, and all of the real Mexican dishes. Gamblers, mostly professionals from town, set up in brush arbors. Monte was the main gambling game played by these people at their fiestas. All of these types of celebrations were entertaining. The Germans had their ways. On Farmer's Day, the fire boy was the cock of the walk and had control of the town. The Mexicans could indulge in their love of gambling and betting at the fiesta. Each group had its own customs. There was not much industry as the people of today see things. We had a broom factory, planing mill, oil mill, ice and power plant. Also, large gravel dredging industry on the Guadalupe River, using big dredge boats, tugs, and barges. Blacksmith shops came before garages. Livery stables took care of teams, as do parking lots take care of cars today. There were no motels, only hotels and rooming houses. There were hitching posts and racks, but no parking meters. Hardtop roads were unheard of, as were so many of the petty little old regulations and rules of today. People worked much longer work day than they do today. The usual hours start at 7 in the morning and work through to 8 and even 9 o'clock at night. This was for grocery stores, employees, and barbers, people who worked in car goods and other places. Farmers usually started their day about 4 o'clock in the morning. It's necessary to start this early because the teams had to be fed and rested a little before started to feel. It was considered disgrace to be caught around the barnyard or the house at sunup. A good farmer was in the field when the first rays of the sun hit, and they worked until it was hard to see. That was where the old saying came from, they worked from can to can't. Hardtop streets came into use in Victoria. Dust was a big problem. In dry summertime, the city had a sprinkler wagon. This was simply a large tank mounted on wagon wheels pulled by team. It pulled up to the fire plug, filled the tank, and then slowly went along the street with the big sprinklers in the back, spraying out and wetting down the dust. Unless a person has lived through one of these long dusty spells and all of the dust flying into the home, they do not realize what a great relief the old sprinkler wagon was. Ice was delivered from large ice wagons. The ice was put in the wagon in 300-pound blocks. And as the wagon proceeded along the street, each home had a sign in the window telling how many pounds of ice they wanted. These old-time Negro ice men on the wagons were real experts on sawing and splitting the ice into small blocks, usually 12 and a half, 25, 50, 100 pounds. Ice was carried into the house and put into an ice box, not a refrigerator. Custom of the housewife to call the grocery store or telephone, give her order, and which was put up by the clerks loaded on a small delivery wagon and brought to the house and carried into the kitchen by the delivery man. It was almost unheard of for a woman to go to the grocery store to make the purchase. Meat was delivered from the meat market by the same way. People did not go to the store or the market as they do today. As I remember, the first crude methods and attempts at drilling oil wells happened in the country around Nursery and Telfer. The derricks were built on the site and were made of heavy timbers. Steam power was used to push the drill. The science of drilling was very crude. Many stratas of oil and gas were passed up by these old-time drillers. They had no way of knowing when they were hitting anything unless it blew out. The first oil exploration around here was done by locally formed companies. The local people put up the capital and hired the outside drillers to do the work. Santa Claus number one was a well drilled up on the Manley Williams place. Another Santa Claus was drilled down in the below town in the Darnell country. Near the city pump plant on West Staten Street, a well was drilled went by the name of the Golden Eagle. None of these were successful. No oil was produced. There was, in the early days, a few small gas wells, but they had no way of using the gas. No pipelines or anything else. Natural gas, as we know it today, came into Victoria in the late 1920s, when a pipeline was laid through from somewhere below Victoria toward Houston. And the great splurge of piping for gas started in Victoria. It was not long after that until most homes were equipped with natural gas, and fireplaces and wood heaters were on the way out. There seems to be a great desire today, people building homes, to put in fireplaces or to buy the old-time wood heaters and install that in the house. That, I guess, is considered antiques. Most of the good stores, especially those large mercantile stores out in the rural communities, carried everything that a person needed, from a sewing needle to a plow, coffin, whiskey, food, ammunition, you name it, and they had it. There was very little that a person could not buy in those old stores. These discount stores of today are more or less a repetition of the old-time general mercantile store, which flourished in the early days of this century. During World War I, there were no large army camps or military establishments around Victoria. It is true there was a couple of companies of men organized here and went to the service, but they only served in an encampment for a few weeks until they were shipped off to Fort Worth. World War II was different. We did have two large army establishments, Foster Field and Allow Field, which brought thousands of men into the community. One of the old-time religious practices was the protracted meeting and the week, taking all their camping equipment, set up and stay as much as a week at a time, attending services during the day and each night. Some religious groups are baptized in the creeks. Spring Creek was one of the favorite places. The Guadalupe River just above town was another spot that was used so much. But practically all of the creeks had their share of converting people by immersion. For over 125 years, Victoria has had almost all of the denominations represented in our midst. They have all had good, substantial buildings and held their regular services. One of the greatest differences I see today is pupils getting to school. In my days, attending public school, there were no school buses. If a pupil got to school, he either walked or the parents took him in the buggy or later the car. It was not considered necessary for all of the taxpayers to foot the bill to get somebody's kid to school. If they wanted an education, they'd get there. I don't think that we were petted and pampered as they are today. Certainly, the school officials had a little bit more authority over the student body. Every case was not carried to court. By taking cases to court, I mean that it seems to me that in almost all cases where a school official hands down some decision or makes a rule, some parent jumps up and immediately throws it into court. And a judge, probably in another town, hands down his decision and tells the school officials what they can do and what they cannot do. Maybe this is the way it ought to be. We'll leave that to the experts. This will have to be a kind of a rambling talk, as things keep occurring to my mind as I go along. The subject of epidemics brings up the great flu scare and epidemic immediately after World War I and during the latter part of the war. Untold numbers of people died from this flu. It was something new. Doctors didn't know what it was. They had no treatment. Emergency hospitals were set up in Victoria to take care of the sick. This was during the early days of Prohibition, and there was great quantities of whiskey being captured. This was bootleg whiskey. One of the common remedies that the doctors used was, in treatment of flu, was prescribing whiskey. What this did for people, nobody ever knew, but it seemed to help. After a long period, the epidemic seemed to lessen. But while it was at its height, many of the prominent and substantial people of Victoria fell victim to it, as well as great numbers of citizens all over the county. It was a time of death and sorrow. And the fact that medical science knew nothing to do made it worse. In the early days, almost all buying and merchandising was done on credit. People just didn't have the cash to go pay for each item they bought, so everything was charged. Many, many concerned and company went broke due to the fact they were carrying too many people on the books. After you get them on the books and they bought the merchandise, there's not much you can do to get the money. And like today, they simply quit trading with that concern and went over and traded with another one that would handle their account on time. One great difference in the merchandise offered today is the amount of refrigerated food. In the 1920s, they did have some form of refrigeration, but it was large, crude, walk-in boxes chilled by ice, and very little food was kept there. Fruit was a seasonal affair. Almost every year, the same man would come into town and announce it, and a day or two, he would have a carload of bananas on the siding, or he would unload a carload of Arkansas apples at a certain old building on Main Street. People would flock there with boxes, baskets, sacks to get the oranges, apples, other fruit, especially for Christmas. As the Christmas holidays approached, great shipments of boxed apples came in, oranges, lemons. Grapefruit, however, was something unheard of. We just didn't use it. About the only time there was very much fruit around was during the Christmas season, and that was always purchased by box or basket lot. Stores didn't stock this stuff the year round. They had no way of protecting it. There was no refrigeration, and spoilage caused them to discontinue handling as soon as the weather got warm. When I was a small boy, ice every day was something unheard of. We were lucky enough, however, to have ice on Sunday. We'd buy about 25 pounds of ice, wrap it in papers, and then wrap that in a sack, grass sack, toe sack, or whatever you want to call it. Usually put that in a box. And in the summer, the main item for our noon meal was iced tea. Ice was chipped off of this block, put in the glasses to chill the tea. The very idea of having iced tea every day was unheard of. Our bread was delivered by a bakery wagon. A large horse was used to pull this wagon. Part of the harness had bells, and several blocks away, a person could hear the tingling of the bells, and they knew that the bakery wagon was coming. It was time to be out on the edge of the street or the sidewalk with a nickel to get a loaf of bread. Bread was not wrapped or sliced. You bought it just as it came out of the oven. If you wanted it wrapped, you wrapped it yourself after the wagon driver handed it to you. Meat was delivered from the market in little two-wheeled gigs, usually pulled by a skinny horse. This little gig had a rear footboard, and it was something to see some young boy driving his wagon balance on one foot and whirl his gig and horse around the corner. One of the ambitions of almost every boy was to get to ride on the footboard of a gig. Most of the homes had large yards, and that was the playground for the children. Children of the neighborhood would gang up at one home or another and play games like Wolf Across the River, Annie Over, Bull Gator, or some other form. They were usually games of much activity and running. No child ever stayed in the house as long as the weather was good enough to be outside. This practice of laying down or squatting down and watching television was something that we didn't even know about. The city park, which today is known as De Leon Plaza, was the town playground. Here the boys of the town gathered to shoot marbles, play tops, play mumble peg, mostly to fight. The old city marshal would walk up and down the street. He would see the fights. He did nothing about it. The only time he ever came over onto the park was when two boys were standing there bumping shoulder with each other and with a chip, a piece of wood, or a piece of grass on their shoulder, just bumping into each other. Old city marshal would come over and tell him to either go home or get to fighting, cut it out. If he didn't want to fight, then quit acting like it. And that usually stopped all of the bad blood. Because actually, they didn't want to fight, they were just putting on. This is a rather sketchy little talk, and I know I'm jumping around a good deal. There are a good many breaks. Unfortunately, I'm afflicted with a throat ailment, and I'll have to stop short intervals to let my trouble clear up.
And the firemen came all round in town. The different fire departments competed in all kinds of ways to hold something larger than that compared to the race of the next. Dick's parade was the highlight of the celebration. Floats, carriages, and people on horseback. The earliest parades I remember did not contain a single gasoline driven vehicle. Big barbecue in the street. After the park, and I called Leon Plaza, was fenced off and set up the table. The quarter block in the rear of our old courthouse building was in those days basically three times structure. Here, the big fire pit to go. The entire quarter of the block was to be taken up with three ships. Cowboy Steve was fixing big cast iron pots. He and him kept themselves for all they wanted at any time during the night. And the meat was usually put on to start cooking sometime about dark. The cooking continued all night and up until the next day of serving time. This meat was not cut up in small chunks as it is today. It was large, 20, 30, and 40 pound pieces of meat. The meat and the other supplies were donated. One barbecue at the end of World War I honored the returning servicemen. The answer to this air donated 50 steers, not carriers, but big 3- and 4-year-old steers. Another attraction was the tournament race, which was run along the south side of Billion Plaza and the old courthouse, which in those days was the only county football in town. These tournament races were patterned after tournaments of Maryland and the Tidewater section of the East Coast. They were an offshoot and had come down to the old tournaments practiced in England. It was considered quite an honor to win one of these tournaments. At night, several dances were held in the halls around town. The merriment went on to daylight. Another form of entertainment was theater. They were somewhat different from the Fireman's Day or the old German celebration. Here, Mexican food, gambling, horse racing, cock fighting, and a lot of fighting among the men. As a rule, a dance would be given at night on open air platforms. There are still a few fiestas given today, but they have lost their old time flavor and attraction. The old time fiesta ground resembled a camp meeting more than anything else. Small food groups were put up usually under a dressed cover. Gamblers, mostly professionals in town, set up in dress order. Monty was the main gambling game. All of these types of celebrations were entertained. The Germans had their way. The firemen and top of the wall for their day. The Mexicans had indulged in the love of gambling and betting at the fiesta. Each group had their own custom. And speaking of the old time fiesta, gone or the old time Mexican about that, they was a little town rather tall and an entirely different company and a appearance from those Mexican Americans of today. The heavy set fat Mexican American appeared in the 1920s at the time so many were crossing into Texas. Work in agriculture. I take no sides in discrimination or anything else. and no comments to make about any race. But I'm only telling the changes that have seen take place in my life. There was not much industry of the people to say these things. We had a gin factory, cannon mill, oil mill, ice power plant, and several other smaller one-man industries. Blacksmith shop came before garage. River traders took care of teams at the parking lots of garages today. There were no motels, only hotels and rooms. There were hitching racks and hitching posts, but no parking units. Hard top roads unheard of, as were so many of every little regulations and rules of today. Victoria has always been connected with cattle. There were a few big spreads. Great number of cowmen on a small place, as they are today. On the San Antonio River and the area north of town above the highway to Houston, there are large ranch holdings today. The north part of the county is covered with big cow operations and very few people. The first movement of cattle out of Victoria County was not up to scale to Kansas, as the writers would have people believe. Cattle and horses were driven overland to New Orleans, Mississippi River in early Civil War days and during the war. Cattle and stock driven to Galveston and taken by boat to Cuba and up to Mississippi. The big cow drives to the north came a little late. As I look back on things, I remember how cattle were moved overland driven by cowhands. There were several cow buyers and shippers. Bud Murphy and his partner, Mr. Ark, Barnes Cavalier, Ed Keynes, and Andy Keynes. Their men are big buyers came to deal with the big ranches. And they rode the cattle went to the stockyard. The cattle buyer went to the country, called at each place, looked at the cattle, made a deal, paid cash, or bought cash for the cattle. Some days later, he started driving to the front end of the county. As he passed there down in the Mariana country, now called Mike Pass. As his cowhands came along the public road, past these places where he purchased cattle, they moved into the pasture, cut out his animals, and threw them in with the herd. The cattle were moved over the public road and across open lands and shipped to places like Dallas, Pioneer, Elk, Union Pins, and on to the larger pins in Victoria, which were located where Grosswood and Bullsdale is today. At these pins, stock cars were spotted or parked. The cattle loaded aboard, the car door sealed by a railroad employee. The next freight train to come by headed in the right direction, picked up the cattle, and carried them on to some terminals at the east. Some of the largest stock buyers would load out a special stock train with perhaps 20 or 30 cars. This train went direct to some large terminal or straight through to stockyards, like Algiers, Louisiana, St. Louis, Kansas City. These were the regular and most prominent markets of that day. Some of these old-time cow buyers were experts at remembering cattle. This was called reading the place. A few buyers could recognize any animal they had looked over and bought, even several years later. Mr. Bud Murphy was one of the best. He never looked over a bunch of cattle in the pens on the ranch or farm, but he still polished and threw them in the pasture. If cattle are run or pen, they get hot and nervous. The pad was not laid flat, and it was too hard to judge the weight of an extra rough haired animal. In the early 1920s, cow people started using flammable bulls over their cow heads. This got good fast during the cross bred animal, and it made big changes in the cow business. Even today, cattle with some brand drugs do the best. This cow operators of this country do very little to help local economies. Most of them have ranch store commissary, etc. All supplies such as wire, rail parts, tubes, minerals, salt, pump, and so forth are purchased from Tulsa. Very little is handled by local merchants. These people do not sell cattle to local auction rooms. Their cattle go direct to commission houses with big stockings. Some of the greatest things take place in cow operations and ranches. In the shipping laws of 1920, which got rid of the steel of pitch, the use of brainer bulls, auction rings were good. Up to time, these rings became popular. The little man was at the mercy of the cowboy. Now a man can take his chance at any of the rings to which he hauls his cattle. Improved pasture, minerals, use of sheds, protection, all have helped. To backtrack a little, after such change is received on the scene, he buys, picks up the purchased cattle and hauls them to shipping teams. Later, large highway trucks came into use. Today, the greater part of the cattle of this town is sold to the local auction rooms. The old-time German farmer kept a few cows on his place, and they were really the most successful of the cow people. During the last 20 or more years, the biggest landowners and ranchers have been successful in building their cow operations across their estates. It don't make much difference what kind of oil is brought into the cattle and horses. The grease sure does well. Cattle that get to rub on oil well equipment stand in the shade of the derrick are always good deer. One of the best examples of infusion and humble oil money in the ranch, King Ranch herd. Here I must make a correction. In my statement about the three legal hangings in this story, I said that there was one hanging that took place in 1990. This was an error. The last man hanged in Victoria County, Fight man, and he was hanged in 1930, not 1919. The first part of this recording, my name did not get recorded. My name is Sidney R. Withers, 66 years old, born in.
The cattle will move along the road and over some open country to the railroad shipping pens, places like Allo, Inez, Telfer, Julia Penn, or to the large pens in Victoria, which are located where Gross Word and Wholesale House is today. This is an extra large railroad shipping pen. At these pens, stock cars were spotted or parked. The cattle loaded aboard, the car door sealed by a railroad employee, and left for the first train to pick up. Some of the larger ranches or buyers would load out a special stock train of perhaps 20 cars or more. This train went direct to some large terminal like Houston or maybe straight through to the stockyard. Algiers, Louisiana, St. Louis, and Kansas City were the regular marketplaces. Some of these old-time cowboys were experts at remembering cattle. This was called reading the flesh marks. A few buyers could recognize any animal they had looked over and bought even several years later. Mr. Bud Murphy was one of the best. He never looked over a bunch of cattle in the pens on the ranch or farms. It was his policy to see them in the pasture. It was his contention that if cattle are run or penned, they get hot and nervous, and the hair does not lay flat, and it is too hard to judge the weight of an extra rough-haired animal. In the early 1920s, cow people started using brainer bulls over their cow herds. This got a good, fast-growing, crossbred animal. It also put the brainer blood into the animal, which made them stand the insects and the heat of this country. It made big changes in the cow business. Even today, cattle with some brainer blood do the best. The big cow operators of this section do very little to help the local economy.
Most of them have a ranch store commissary set up somewhere. All supplies such as wire, well port, feed, mineral, salt, lumber, and so forth are purchased at wholesale. Very little is handled by local merchants. These people do not sell cattle through the local auction rings. Their cattle go direct to commission houses at big stockyards. Some of the greatest things to take place in the cow operation and ranching was the dipping law of the 1920s, which got rid of the fever tick, the use of Bramah bulls, the coming of auction rings. Up to the time these rings became popular, the little man was at the mercy of the cow buyer. Now a man can take his chance of the ring, take his choice of the ring to which he hauls his stock. Improved pastures, minerals, use of sheds for petitions, all have, I should have said for protection, not petitions, all have helped. To backtrack a little, after trucks came into use, the buyers picked up their purchased cattle and hauled them to the shipping pens. Later, large highway trucks came into use. Today, the greater part of the cattle of this county are sold to the local auction rings. The old-time German farmer kept a few cows on his place and were really the most successful of cow people. During the last 20 more years, the biggest landowners and ranchers have been successful in building their cow operations with crossbred stuff. Probably the cow outfit that hauled them, that moved the greater number of cattle overland, was the McFadden Ranch from Mariana, or McFadden. This ranch had places along the San Antonio River and ranches some miles north of Victoria on the Garcetas Creek. It was their policy every year to pick the young steer and carry them overland through Victoria to the Garcetas Creek. Their first stop and overnight camp was in a pasture on at the intersection of Lone Tree Road and present-day Ben Wilson Street. This, I believe, is a subdivision today called Meadowmere. Here, a steer was butchered to feed all the cowhands. In exchange for a supply of good drinking water from a neighbor, a large chunk of fresh beef was always presented. The next day, these cattle were moved up to the Garcia Creek. Here they stayed until they were steers, 3, 4, 5, some even 6 years old. When shipping time came, they were started out across country. They crossed, let the fence down between the McFaddens and the Welders. And from then on, for 11 miles, these cattle trekked across the Welder pasture to Blue Mark. And at one time, as far up as Julia Penn. These cattle were then loaded into trains and shipped to Kansas, where they grazed on the Flint Hills, on that rich grass, and then went to market. When the talk comes up of cattle and ranches and successful operators, the statement is often heard that crossbred cattle are good, and it don't make much difference what kind of oil company is crossed into the cattle and horses. The breed sure does well, and cattle that get to rub oil wells and other oil equipment are always good doers. One of the best examples was the infusion of Humble Oil money into the King Ranch herd. In our area, we have many, many stories and tales of ghosts, folklore, voodoo doctors, herb doctors, and all other types of medicine men and self-appointed healers. The stories of our past and of the folklore of this county are almost endless. In my case, I have contracted with other parties for the use of all of my memoirs as far as folklore and medicine policies are concerned. Therefore, I cannot offer anything along that line in this recording. I was born in Victoria, an address which in 1972 is listed as the 1200 block of North Moody Street. At the time of my birth in 1906, this block was outside the city limits. I have watched Victoria grow from a town of some 4,000 people to what it is today. While I have lived in other towns and other sections of the state, I have spent the greater part of my life in Victoria and Victoria County. My first school was at Old Bronson in the 500 block of West Power Street. This was a two-story brick building with six rooms and was the first elementary school to be built in Victoria. The restrooms were not in the main building. They were in a small, separate brick building in the rear of the school. This school was on a plot of ground which comprised one half of a city block. The street in front and on the east side were gravel. Victoria Street on the west was a dirt street. Miss Baldwin was my first teacher, and the principal was Miss Rima Leffen. I attended this school through the third grade, and then moved to Victoria High School in the fourth grade. Not the present Victoria High, but the building that was on East Commercial Street. The high school division moved to Patty Welder High in about 1918, and the high school was then changed to Central and later to Mitchell, the name it has today. In the fall of 1920, I went to Patty Welder High in the seventh grade. Thus, I attended class in two different high schools before I was out of grade school. The teachers, as I remember, were as good as they are today, but much stricter. We did not have all the aids that are used today. According to the experts running around loose today, all the teaching methods of that time were wrong. But in my school days, I never knew anyone to get as far as the fifth grade and not be able to read. Victoria County was one of the first in Texas to have a gravel all-weather road. These extended from the city limits to the county line in the direction of Fort Lavaca, Edna, and Cuero, and on past Bloomington. The road to Goliad and the Furio were not gravel all the way to the county line. These roads were worked with crude equipment and mules. There were no improved road to Harrisville. Victoria's principal streets were gravel until 1917, when the first asphalt streets were put in the business district. I have seen large loaded wagons bogged down on Main Street on the east side of Dillion Plaza in the heart of town. My first travel was by buggy or wagon. Horseback was one of the most common modes of transportation. Now, oxen as draft animals were almost a thing of the past when I was growing up, but I can remember a few yoke of oxen pulling wagons into town, one in particular was hauling pecans to market. By about 1914, automobiles were coming into use, but there were more teams, buggies, wagons, and riding horses than automobiles. The first autos were too crude and the roads too bad for cars to come into use at too fast a pace. During the long wet spells, a great majority of the rural roads and many of the town streets became mud holes without bottom and could not be traveled, some not even by horseback. In my boyhood, cotton was king. It was the main money crop. Farmers raised great quantities of corn, cane, hay, and peanuts, but practically all feedstuff went to keep up the teams, poultry, hogs, and cattle. Most farmers raised and processed a good deal of their own food. Hogs, chickens, sheep, turkeys, fruit and vegetables were usually raised and canned or dried, and the meat put up and smoked. In the south part of this county, where there were large fields, most of the land was put in corn and cotton. In the western part, and that section across the Guadalupe River, and the area near Inez and up and down Garcetas Creek, the land was less suited to large plots of cultivation. Here the people practiced living at home. and raised what they ate. They sold or traded produce for staple groceries. Farming was done entirely with teams, and in most cases walking implements. But later came riding plows and cultivators, and finally the tractors took over. There was, as a rule, a family on each 40 to 60 acres of farmland. With teams, it took a real farmer to farm and cultivate 40 acres with horses or mules. All of these families, either owners or sharecroppers, had to eat and buy supplies. This made for a good rural economy. A small town in the cotton belt was something to see on a Saturday during cotton picking time. Pickers jammed all of the stores and spent money. Cotton insects, Johnson grass, government regulation, acreage control, and many other things have put cotton out of the picture, especially synthetics. The old City Hall Square, where the City Hall sits today, was the focal or gathering place for the farmers when they came into town. The old City Hall sat in the center of the block. Hitching racks lined all of the square along the sidewalk, and another string of hitching racks surrounded the old City Hall building. On Saturdays, this square would literally be filled with wagons, buggies, and saddle horses. The main business part of town in those days was a 3 or 4 block stretch along Main Street, from Forest to Wan Lin. There were no shopping centers as we know today. During my boyhood, most of what is Victoria today was in cotton fields or pastures. The sidewalks on Saturday would be crowded with people from the farm, whole families. People met, shook hands, and visited for a while. Usually they didn't see each other but every 6 or 7 months or maybe once a year. By 4 o'clock in the afternoon, most of the shoppers were on their way home. The roads were rough, and there were many chores waiting at home. People tried to get home before dark, as the old wagon and team did not have headlights. At one time, 2 of the main business streets were Wan Lin from Cameron East to what is today Laurent Street. Wan Lin was the route to Guadalupe and Port Lavaca. The other was Bridge Street from the foot of Convent Hill to the end of the street at the river. In those days, the river bridge was at the south end of Bridge Street. Moody Street in those days was a mere mud lane, and there was no bridge crossing the river where we crossed at this time. Moving from place to place and town to town was a problem. There were no good roads, and buggy and teams were slow. The railroad was the thing. The first trains I remember were already switched to using fuel oil that had quit burning coal. There were a great number of fine luxury passenger trains. Trains ran from Port Lavaca to Quero, from Houston to Victoria to Beeville, and made good connections. There were as many as 4 trains each way back in the days before 1920. Almost any occasion called for a special or an excursion train. These were special trains made up and just ran from, say, Houston to Port Lavaca. One of the most popular runs started at Houston, came to Victoria, and then on to Port Lavaca. All along the route, Wharton, El Campo, Edna, Grenada, many people got on the train to go down to the seacoast. In Victoria, trains came in from Beeville and from Quero and transferred their passengers or their coaches to the special train. There was one train that at one time carried as many as 400 people on excursion. Port Lavaca was one of the most popular spots. It had a big pavilion built out over the water, and it was noted far and wide for its fine seafood. Here at this pavilion, they had dancing, music, and food, and something for people to do. Good highways, automobiles, radios, TV, motion pictures, and other things have killed the need of this kind of entertainment. But in its days, it was the highlight of many a person's life. As I remember the first telephones, they were wall hung and battery crank type. The telephone company put in the system in the town and had switchboards, but rural people would organize and build their own line to connect with the town system. These were crude but cheap and served their purpose. In town, the connection was made by giving the operator the number, who plugged into the proper circuit and connected with the person with whom you wanted to talk. The downtown section of Victoria was a mass of poles and wires. These were all put underground when the streets were paved in 1917-1918, which changed the looks of the town. And the first real drought I remember was in 1917. The Guadalupe River was almost dry. The first rice hay I ever saw used as cow or stock feed was brought into this section during this big drought. The 1900 Galveston storm was way before my time. The 1919 and 1921 storms are still vivid in my mind. Like most Gulf storms, Victoria got a lot of wind and rain. Trees and roofs suffered until the practice of building tar and gravel roofs of composition shingles. Most houses had good wooden shingle roofs. These do not blow away like the gravel and composition types do. I can't seem to remember many residents of Victoria leaving town ahead of a big blow years ago. This happened during Carla and Beulah and the recent storm. I guess that the old timers were the kind that didn't run. They stayed put. Since 1906, I've stayed through every storm or hurricane that has hit Victoria, except one in 1945, which time I was in Pacific War area. I still have my first time to run. During my early youth, my father was sheriff of Victoria County and served as an officer in some capacity for 40 years. He started his career as a deputy under his uncle in 1896 at the age of 19. His early years as an officer were strictly the old-time horse-mounted lawman. All travel was by horse or buggy. When on the trail of a wanted man, he would at times be away from town for several days. He literally lived in the saddle. In all the long history of Victoria, there have been but three hangings, and those were all legal. Two whites and one negro. The first was in 1838, the second in 1907, and the third in 1919. The first was a white man, the second was a negro, and the third was a white man. Up until about 1925 or 1930, the city officers of Victoria rode horses. There was no chief of police, but an elected city marshal, and his deputies were known as deputy marshals. A person did not say a man was a deputy city marshal. They remarked that he was riding city horse. This expression came from the fact that all of the city officers were horse-mounted. Law enforcement officers have been about the same over the years, some good and some bad, like teachers, bankers, mechanics, doctors, and preachers. During my early life, an elected peace officer was expected to go get the criminal himself, especially if the man was considered bad. There was no FBI, no state highway patrol, radio, radar, fingerprint, and all such things. But surprisingly enough, the capture average of these old-timers was about on par with the officer of today. There is not too much difference in the criminal of today and the one of other years. Maybe today they are a little younger. There were just as many sorry, no-good punks for each 100 people as they are today. There are just more people in the world today. And politics has always played a big part in every community. And politics and politicians are still politicians in politics. They still try to impress people that their only motive in seeking office is the welfare of the voters. A different system is used to hunt votes. In the old days, political rallies at schools and so forth was carried on by great oratory. They tried to sway the crowd. Today, it is television. But the same old bucket of stuff is dished up. Pie suppers, barbecues, and speech making were the main thing in the old-time campaign. As a rule, political campaigns wound up 1 week before election at the old Raisin Hall. Here, each candidate got up and expressed himself or talked about the other one. There were many, many very tense times at the old Raisin Hall during political meetings. I guess Victoria County had its smuggling and all of the things that went with Prohibition. But the less said about those, perhaps the better. Most anyone who had grandpas in the USA during Prohibition can learn all about it by simply asking their kinfolks. As for murders and hangings, everyone that ever committed a crime or ever got killed has kinfolks. Many of the killings were justified, many were not. But perhaps there are many, many of the innocent people who were relatives of the murderers or the victim. It was no fault of theirs that anything happened. What I know of these is best passed over and forgotten. The early doctors I remember were buggy doctors. A short time later, they began to use cars. Most all of the doctors made house calls, even at night. They carried their instruments and simple medicines with them in a little medical bag. These old-time medical men were wonderful psychologists and judges of human character. They all had what was called a good bedside manner. The doctor may not have been the best in the world, but there was certainly a feeling of relief to see the doctor come driving up in his buggy and crawl out with his little satchel. Someone was there to help. Some old doctors said medicine worked best if it had a sweet taste or a bitter taste. If it was bright colored, even the odor made it better. Doctors carried little iodoform pads in their pockets that gave them that doctor smell. A dentist could be identified by the odor of oil of cloves. This always impressed people because oil of cloves was a dentist smell. Doctors could and would operate in a home on a kitchen table or a bed or anything handy. They used their own knives, or if they were not handy, pocket knife or some other type of knife. When way out in the country, the roads were muddy, freezing weather, and no transportation, there was no way to get a patient to town. Something had to be done, and done quickly. And these old-time horse and buggy doctors always arose to the occasion and did their best. If a doctor today did not have all the highly trained, efficient technicians to run tests and tell him what the troubles are, I expect the old-time doctor was about as good as the modern one would be if it was up to him to decide what ailment a patient suffered from. Among the older people, many home remedies were used. The Negro and Mexican were good with herbs and home cures. Surprisingly enough, much of the medicine used today comes from the same plants or old folks and home remedy doctors used in the years gone by. In fact, all the small towns and communities had a doctor or two. Places like Nursery, Pioneers, Guadalupe, Acosta, Bloomington, Allo, Mission Valley all had them. Most of these places boasted a small drugstore with trained pharmacists. It may have been in connection with a general mercantile store, But these old druggists were practically all trained and had some education in drug preparation and were considered to be as good as a doctor in advising any kind of treatment. There was an old-time doctor at Guadalupe who formed and doctored on the side. His doctoring garb was a long tail coat and a derby hat. He rode a good horse in good weather, but in cold, rainy weather, he went on his medical rounds on a small gray mule, which would swim the flooded creeks and big flats. There were very few bridges in those days. After examining the patient, fixing some powder, and leaving instructions, this old doctor mounted up and went back to his farm with his derby hat and long tail coat and gray mule. Old-time doctors that are remembered were old Dr. Ward, Dr. William D. Tarr, Dr. Mike Mullin, Dr. Linscombe, Shields, Two Hopkins, Dr. Borden, and Dr. Smith. These were of the old-time horse and buggy school. Dr. Roy Ward, now retired, treated me over 50 years ago. There were a number of other doctors I have forgotten. My grandfather, Dr. Joseph Wisner, and his son, Evan, were doctors in Victoria County as far back as 1852. One thing the old doctor knew, and that was to isolate patients with contagious diseases. It was the custom of the city or county health officer to ban all public gatherings during an epidemic. Shows, games, churches, and all other group collections were ordered disbanded. Victoria, like practically all other towns, had many different forms of festivals. Some of the German celebrations stand out. There was always an abundance of food. There was dancing and singing. They always had good bands. The Germans were the people who brought music and laughter and singing to Victoria County until the German immigrants appeared. There is no record any form of music, bands, or entertainment. They may have had it, but if so, there is no record. The German was a lover of music and fun. They loved their beer. A great number of them were highly educated musicians, and besides being good players, they were wonderful teachers. Farmer's Day in Victoria was the tops. This was one day each year set aside to honor the volunteer fire department. It was their day. They were the cock of the walk. Visiting firemen came from all the surrounding towns. Special trains and excursion trains ran in from each direction, bringing great numbers of people. Different fire departments from surrounding towns competed in all types of races, hose coupling, nozzle connection, Paris rule races, and others. The big fireman parade was the highlight of the celebration. Floats, carriages, and people on horseback. I can remember the first parades I ever saw. There was no gasoline-powered vehicles in the parade. The big barbecue was free. Half of the park, now called Dillion Plaza, was fenced off and set up with tables. A large metal system was set up on blocks and filled with water and blocks of ice. There would be as many as 25 or 30 tin cups attached to this old system by chains. This was the public drinking spot. The quarter block in rear of the old courthouse building was in those days vacant of any kind of structure. Here the big fire pits were dug. The entire quarter of a block would be taken up with the pits. Cowboy stew was cooked in big cast iron pots. Anyone who cared could help themselves to as much as they wanted all night. The meat and most other supplies were donated. At one barbecue at the end of World War I to honor the returned servicemen, the ranchers of Victoria County donated 50 steers free of charge. These were not calves. They were big steers. Another attraction was the tournament. races, which will run along the south side of Dillon Plaza and the south side of the old courthouse. Back in those days, this street was gravel. There was no hardtop. These tournaments were patterned after tournaments of Maryland and of the Tidewater section of the East Coast. They were something that had come down from the days of the tournaments of England. Riders mounted on horses with a long lance or spear made a run attempting to spear small rings which were hung from a string from some form of a tower or a rack. The winners had the privilege of selecting the queen for the night, and it was considered quite an honor to be the leader in the tournament. The fiestas were somewhat different. Here there was Mexican food, gambling, horse racing, cockfights, and a lot of fighting among the people. As a rule, a dance would be given at night on an open-air platform. There are still a few fiestas given today, but they have lost their old-time flavor and attraction. Gone are the old-time Mexicans of our section. They were, as a rule, slim, rather tall, and of entirely different temperament and appearance from those Mexican-Americans of today. The heavy-set, fat Mexican-American we have today appeared in the 1920s at the time so many were coming into Texas from across the Rio Grande to work in agriculture. By this statement, I'm not running them down. I'm not discriminating. I'm merely saying something that I have seen happen and changes that have taken place in my lifetime. The old-time fiesta ground resembled a camp more than anything else. Small food booths were put up, usually under a brush cover. Gamblers, mostly professionals from town, set up in brush arbors. Monty was the main gambling game played by these people. All of these types of celebrations were entertaining. The Germans had their way. The firemen were the big boy of their day. The Mexicans could indulge in their love of gambling and betting at the fiestas. Each group had its own custom. There was not much industry as the people of today see things. We had a broom factory, planing mill, oil mill, ice and power plant, and a few other small industries. Blacksmith shops came before garages. Livery stables took care of teams as we park in lots and garages today. There were no motels, only hotels and rooming houses. There were hitching posts and hitching racks, but no parking meters. Hard top roads were unheard of, as were so many petty little regulations and rules after that. Victoria has always been connected with cattle. There were a few big spreads, but a great number of cattle were raised on small places as they are today. On the San Antonio River in the area north of town, about north of highway heading for Houston, are large ranch holdings. The north part of the county is covered with big cow operations and very few people. The first movement of cattle out of Victoria County was not up the trail to Kansas, as the writers would have people believe. Cattle and horses were driven overland to New Orleans, to the Mississippi River in early Civil War days, and all through the years of the war. Cattle and stock were driven to Galveston and taken by boat to Cuba and up the Mississippi. The big cow drives north came a little later. As I look back, cattle were moved overland, driven by cowhands. There were several cow buyers and shippers, Mr. Bud Murphy and his partner, Mr. Art, Lawrence Taglerud, Ed Seaman, and the Angustine brothers. Steermen or steer buyers would come in several times a year to make deals with the big ranches, and trade loads of cattle went to the stockyards in Algiers, Louisiana, Kansas City, St. Louis, and other places. A cow buyer in those days went through the country horseback or in a Model T Ford. They stopped at each place, looked at the cattle, and made a deal if there was anything they wanted. Either a check or cash was given for the cattle. Some days later, a drive would start at, say, the old Mariana country now called McFadden.